Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to What's Right with Men, a weekly radio program dedicated to exploring and discussing what it means to be a man in a post-feminist world. Now here are your hosts, John Freeman and Roger Wetzel.
Well, good afternoon and evening, and welcome to What's Right with Men. Hi, John.
Hi, Roger.
How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. So today our show topic is opening up a can of worms, I'd say. Today we're going to talk about are men and women's brains really wired differently? And I found an article actually in this month's Oprah magazine with the title that is just that, are men and women's brains wired differently? And I didn't really realize
Hello? It's gone very quiet.
Yeah, we've lost Roger. Well, there he is. He's back in.
Okay.
For some reason.
Okay, hello. We got you back.
So what I was saying is that I was reading this article in Oprah magazine, Are Men and Women's Brains Really Wired Differently? And it's only like a quarter of a page article, and then when I brought it up to you, John, you sent me that link for the BBC show. What was that entitled? Is Your Brain Male or Female? And mm-hmm. I think I didn't really realize how deep and how wide this topic is being looked at from various different vantage points. And so one of the things that I found really interesting, John, is that the article in this magazine was actually an interview with one of the doctors that was in that BBC show from the University of Pennsylvania, when they were talking about the study that they did with 940 some people ranging in age from age 8 to 22. And I think what we've got on our hands is the age-old question, nature versus nurture, and how those impact our lives on a daily basis.
Well, that should be
John.
Easy.
Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're kind of cutting out. I think we're having some technical difficulties a little bit.
It seems so.
And you know, in looking at this question of nature versus nurture, what we have once again is something that plagues humanity pretty much when it comes on every topic, comes to every topic, and that is a dualistic perspective of life and how that affects us. Because it's an either-or type of question, right? So are all of the things and all of the ways that we think and behave a result of nature, or are they a result of nurture? And it's an interesting topic when it comes to the relationships between men and women. And, you know, one of the things that I'd like to start off with is I think that We need to take a step back, and I wanted to let everybody know that I think that this is going to be a multi-part show, because there's so much information to be looked at. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to do an interview with a woman who's working on her PhD, and she's looking at how cultural influences impact gender roles. So that's going to be a part of this conversation. And so what I'd like to do, and we're waiting for John, I think he's having some difficulties, is being
on
the call. Yeah, I can hear you now. Are you there?
Yeah, I mean, I've been hearing you all the time, so I haven't gone anywhere.
Okay. But what I'd like to do, John, is start kind of from the beginning. And I think, you know, what I mean by that is when I was doing my undergrad work, I took a class entitled Brain and Behavior. And it was offered through the psychology department, but it was far from anything that you'd ever want to imagine taking a psychology class, because it was an in-depth look at our brain and how the brain works and the synapses and all the connections that happen in our brain and how that affects each of us as human beings. And I'll never forget one of the things that was taught in the class had to do with the XX and XY chromosome topic that impacts us all because we're a result of that, right? And one of the things that I learned that was really, really shocking is that females are predisposed to be stronger than males biologically. And that's kind of where I'd like to start this conversation, because I think that it's hugely important given the information that's flying around in the world today, right? Where
Roger, let me make sure that I understand as everybody else understands. When you say predisposed to be stronger, you mean to have more physical strength?
No.
Okay.
I'll get to that. Let me get to that. And before I do, let me give the call out number. It's 347-205-9869. What I mean by that is that each of us has an X chromosome in our DNA. The egg is carried by the mother, always has an X chromosome, right? It's the father that determines the sex of the child via the sperm inseminating the egg, and it will either be an X chromosome, which he gets from his mother's side of the family, or a Y chromosome. And there are some outliers in that. But for the most part, women have two X's and men have an XY, right? And when I say that women are stronger, this is what I mean. It's like having that double X chromosome, there's a built-in immune advantage, right? And we look at when scientists have looked at this over time, what they found is that women live longer than men, and they heal faster than men. Okay. Women have twice as many white blood cells as men, which act as the body's first line of defense. But what's more interesting for me, and it's what I learned years ago and when I was preparing for the show, I found the same information, that fetal boys die more often than fetal girls, that the majority of miscarriages if the fetus had been carried to term, it would have been born a boy, right? Baby mm-hmm. boys die more often than baby girls. Little boys die often more often than little girls, right? And it says one of the statistics that I found is, and it's true. This is true for all over the world, that in the United States, 105 males are born for every 100 females. But as soon as they're out, boys die more often than girls in infancy, right? And the reason I bring this up is because it's a huge biological component, right? That's one of the most important things that makes us who we are, right? And the reason I'm bringing this up is we're going to get into this whole thing of nurturing in a little bit, but I really want to set a baseline for the biology of who we are as human beings, right? And in that BBC episode that we watched, they interviewed a professor at Cambridge University named Simon Baron Cohen, and he's done studies. I think John was something on a lot of around autism, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that they found is that the levels of testosterone that take place in I don't know what scientific term you want to use. But there's the higher the fetus is engulfed in testosterone, there's some link to autism. But the reason that one of the things he said in there is that the higher levels of testosterone in the womb, over time they've studied the babies that were growing up that had that experience in the womb, and that they're slower to develop socially, and cognitively they have issues with looking at and determining what shapes are and where they should go and these kind of things, right? And I'm not a scientist, and I don't want to get this into a deep scientific conversation. But the point is that there's things that happen to us even when we're in our mother's womb that impact who we are as beings when we come out into the world.
Right.
So, again, there's a reason that I'm bringing all of this up, because I think that there's been a lot of pushback in regards to this article that kind of gave us the topic of the show, in regards to the people at the University of Pennsylvania that did this study that looked at people, you know, the 900 and some people from age 8 to 22, and the fact that what they discovered is that on the whole that male brains were wired differently than female brains. And the reason for the pushback is that all of the differences that we experience as men and women in this world are a result of nurturing. And I don't know about you, John, but I have a real problem with either side saying that they have a corner on the market. And that, you know, all of the things that are going on in this world when it comes to relating to one another, men relating to women and vice versa, is a result just of biology or just of nurturing.
Well, whether you're talking about male-female gender differences or the whole of human existence, it's always amazed me. And you know, just to give my own background, the topic that I did my bachelor's degree in was called human sciences. So it was filled with genetics and human biology and psychology and sociology. And so I, you know, like you, my interest in this area goes back a long time, and it was always very clear to me that anybody who started to present a point of view around nature and nurture that said it's all one thing or all the other, really kind of wanted some sense knocked into them, because it's a completely ridiculous notion as far as I'm concerned. And I also, at the time I was going through college, I was sharing a house with somebody who had a small child. And both then and since, when I started to have my own children, I noticed very clearly how there isn't a simple relationship. I mean, I was predisposed. I suppose if I'd had a prejudice about which the answer would be, if it had been as simple as it's, you know, it's all nature or it's all nurture, I would have been predisposed to say it's all nurture. But I reckon that anybody who's had children, particularly if they've had more than one child, is likely to have had the experience that whoever it was came out of the womb and was born had something to say about it already. There's already a whole bunch of things about that person that they're going to be what they choose to be, no matter what kind of upbringing you think you're going to impose on them. And it's a great thing, and I think a great lesson potentially in humility for parents. And of course, you know, if we had Janet on the show this week as an astrologer, she would have a huge amount potentially to say about some of the influences that might cause people to turn up with one set of predispositions or another. But it's so clear to me that, yes, there are differences. You know, you can quote studies. Boys are more likely to be autistic, like you said. They're more likely to be dyslexic. They're more likely to have Tourette's syndrome. On standardized tests, boys have better spatial skills and girls have better language skills. There are predispositions. You know, women are more likely to develop rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis. Heart attacks show up differently in men and women. There are things which are biological. But I'm almost hesitant to say all of that because it leads to something which I think is somewhere between complete garbage and deeply politicized distortion. And what that comes down to is that there is a background to this whole conversation which has to do with the fact that, you know, 50 years ago people did have a lot of prejudices about women being kind of less capable than men of all sorts of things.
Right.
Like, they were not going to be fit to be doctors and stuff if you go back 150 years. They just wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't have the brains for it. And we all know that, you know, the world is filled with women doctors who are as good as or better than men doctors. So we know that's crap, that kind of perception, but it's influenced, it's made it impossible for us to have this conversation without people thinking that there is a political agenda to say that women are less than men or something. You know, I mean, particularly if you're a man, there will be people out there who are listening to what you say, just looking for you to express something with a smidgen of bias. And what makes that kind of particularly weird is firstly that, okay, it stops looking at the places where potentially women do have superior abilities on average compared with men. But the bigger thing is that the on average is actually the bit that matters, because just because, you know, the average of the population for men is slightly more one way and women slightly more another, is much, much smaller than the fact individual difference is really wide. And so the overlaps are huge. And every individual, no matter which of these kind of, apart from kind of which set of genitals you're going to have, which is a fairly, you know, with a few accidental exceptions, which is a fairly bipolar thing, you are one or the other, just about every other trait is a huge overlap where it doesn't matter what your genes are on average, each individual is an individual.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think, you know,
so I'm quite happy that we talk about what does show up as genuine differences, what seems to have scientific validity, and that's not as easy to say as people might think, because the science can often be pretty woolly. I'm quite happy for us to talk about what those differences might be, but if we start to get into a place where it starts to sound like everybody on one gender is one thing and everybody on another gender is another, then we'll have lost the plot.
Absolutely, I agree with that, and I think it goes back to what I said earlier about this whole dualistic perspective that we were inundated with in every area of our life, no matter who we are, right? I mean, we've been brought up to think there's only black or white, there's only, you know, this way or that way, and I think what we have in regard to this discussion, and it'll be interesting to see when we interview our guest in a couple of weeks about this topic and her research. But there's this idea out there that biological determinism, which is what it's been labeled as from the feminist perspective, has no validity. Like, for example, the research that we're going to talk about in a little while that kind of triggered the topic for this show, I mean, there's people out there looking at that going, well, I'll read a couple of quotes, right? This paranoid, gender-obsessed landscape that uses evolutionary biology as a stick to beat us deserves to be taken seriously no more. And then someone else wrote, reports trumpeting basic differences between male and female brains or biological determinism at its most trivial. And this is where we're at. I mean, we have people and we have this perspective, and it's almost like a religion where if you don't believe the doctrine of the religion, then you're going to be excommunicated, right? But I really think, John, that that's just such simplistic thinking, right? And I don't think that it really does anyone any good to say that biological research and neurological research and all of these things that are happening, right? I mean, you have more of the scientific bent in you than I do, right? That there's validity in the research has been slow, but all of a sudden we're starting to find different things that we didn't know that existed before. Is that correct?
Sorry, say that last sentence again.
I said that you have more of a scientific, you're more scientifically oriented than I am.
Yeah.
So my question to you is that and the research that's being done, that's been done over time in regards to like the brain and the, all of these things, it's been slow coming, but all of a sudden it's starting to open up more and there's been more revelations and more discoveries. Is that correct?
Well, it is, and there's some fairly kind of, you don't have to be a scientist for a couple of the reasons to for that to be obvious. I mean, there's things like all the brain imaging technology that we know medically of CAT scans and magnetic resonance imagery and so on. People are able to see much more of what's going on in brains than they ever were before. And then you can add to that fact that a lot of the stuff about the chemicals in the brain, neurotransmitters, the whole thing of hormones. I mean, we've known about some of the most basic hormones, the ones that run the reproductive cycle, like testosterone and progesterone and estrogen. We've known about those for a long time, but there's a lot of other chemicals which affect the brain, neurotransmitters, which people have really only been working with significantly for the last 20 years. And on top of that, there's just lots more people doing lots more research. I mean, universities are bigger and they're full of people doing research into all sorts of things which nobody would have thought even worth asking before, and some of which they probably never should. And I could kind of go into some of the downsides of all that research. But yeah, there's lots of detailed stuff coming out. Lots of people are testing lots of different things. And I'm just going to add from a scientific point of view that the difficulty in this, there's a number of difficulties. One is that a lot of science that is done isn't actually very good, but it never gets repeated, the experiment. It just gets published. And a second thing is that sometimes a scientist will go in and do a piece of research which they're trying to show one thing, and the research actually doesn't show that thing. So they look for something else in their study which shows up a difference because they've got to find something they can publish. Mm-hmm. And so they come up with a fairly spurious piece of information which they're then able to publish because their careers depend on it.
Sure.
And then they go out and promote it and they publicize it by trying to make it sound really interesting when it's actually pretty trivial and insignificant, or when it's not a very strong effect. And they make sure that the press pick it up so that what you get to read about science is generally kind of, it's a really diluted version of what science ought to be able to tell you. And it's 98% crap. And I'm not, and you then get the fact that the media probably does like to set up, interesting points of view about, you know, women being better than men or men being better than women. And so the media actually kind of distorts what goes out there in such a way that they're really doing a wonderful job of winding up anybody who wants to get angry about the point of view, whatever it is.
Sure. And the scientists have to get funded.
Exactly.
That's the other thing. They have to be published and they have to be funded. I think for me, as I was going through all of this information today, is that, you know, when you look at the nature aspect versus the nurture aspect, I think that it's one of those two sides of the same coin. I mean, I don't know about you, but I look at it and I say, okay, so nature results is one of the impacts that it has. It's how we think, right? It's the way that we're able to process information. On the flip side of that, the nurture aspect is, what is it that we think? And that is hugely impacted by society and culture and our parents and our peers and all of those things, right? I mean, when you were talking earlier about how we used to think about women, right, and how they weren't, whatever it was that you said, and I have some other stuff that I'll share with you, which I think is kind of funny but sad at the same time, is that I remember when I was growing up, not too long, well, a while back, I mean, you take sports in the United States, right? I remember when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, black athletes were never allowed to be quarterbacks because they weren't smart enough, right? And I mean, and that was a debate that was taking place out in the open, right? Now, 30, 40 years later, we've discovered that that was just a load of crap, right? But that was what we were led to believe. Right, that was the case, and it's the case I think in nurturing that we teach our kids that we're taught by the society whatever it is, this is how it is when in fact it might not be that way at all, but there's also that nature piece, that biological piece, that affects how it is that we think about things. And
absolutely.
We have a caller. So, if we can pull up that caller.
Joe, I've pulled Joe in. Joe, go ahead.
Hey, Joe? Are you with us?
Hello.
Hey there.
Okay.
Welcome to the show.
All right.
Welcome back.
Okay.
What's up?
Are you still talking about communication, or have you verged off into MRIs, CAT scans, and black athletes?
No, we've done a little bit of all of that, but we can talk about communication, so go ahead.
Okay. If you tell your wife or your girlfriend, honey, this annoys me, stop doing it, is that an equivocal position?
Define equivocal.
Equivocal, like ambiguous, like it has different meanings.
I guess it could be. I mean, if I was your wife and you said that annoys me, it's like, what is it I'm doing that is annoying you, and why does it annoy you?
Well, that would be what I would have described in the first place. I wouldn't have just said, honey, that annoys me, and I wouldn't have described what it was to begin with. Let's say it doesn't matter what it is. It's just something. Now, if I say that annoys me, could you stop doing it? And she says yes. I'm going to assume that since she was born in this country, went to private school, public school, college, no college, but since she has learned English, that means, okay, if that annoys him, I'll stop doing it. So this thing, what I'm getting to, is that this thing about communication, men from Mars, women from Venus, that was a book written by a guy who wanted money. He may or may not have known what he was talking about. If you're speaking mm-hmm. English to somebody in this country, and if you're not using hints or metaphors but speaking directly, both men and women have no excuse for not understanding what the other person's saying. So to me, this thing about when women say, well, we didn't really know what you meant, or we really didn't know how it would affect you, maybe they could get away with it the first time or second time. But if you're drilling down and saying, okay, all right, maybe I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, but now what I mean to be more specific is this. And if they continue to do that, same thing with men, if they continue to be annoying or continue to do something which is against the grain, then it's not a matter of miscommunication. It is a matter of playing games or malice or something other than miscommunication.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Well, yeah, but the many other things that it could include would be kind of that a lot of people have ways of being that are not totally under their conscious control. So the fact that they've heard you and they know that it annoys you doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be something that they can just simply stop.
Okay, now you're really overthinking this. All right. If I say to somebody, "This is bothering me, could you stop it?" And then she says, "Yes," that means that's yes. That means I don't care what else she wants to bring in the future about some kind of an excuse, because she should have spoke up then and there. And by communicating directly with me about whatever condition that you may presume that she has, I should be aware of it, and I should deal with it, just like she should deal with it. But a yes is a yes, a no is a no, in unequivocal situations.
Well, I wish you luck with that perspective, Joe. I don't know how well it's working for you, but I think if I'd run my relationships like that, it wouldn't have worked. Not with anybody I've ever been with.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? You're letting women get away with stuff they shouldn't get away with.
Well, I guess I don't know what the things are you're sensitive to, and what the things are that wind you up and that you find so difficult.
What we're talking
what
about right now
do, so.
Is communication.
Sorry?
What we're talking about right now is communication. Okay.
Well, no, we're not. We're talking about the stuff that annoys you to the extent that it's a big deal whether people say yes or no to you and whether they're capable
no,
of following through.
No, that's not it. I
have
explained it.
If I
say to anybody, man or woman, this annoys me, and I'm using that as an example because that's about as direct as you can get, this is annoying. Can you stop it? And if the person says yes, it doesn't take a social scientist or a bunch of archaeologists to realize that when a person understands the same language as the person who's talking to them, and if they've agreed to it, that they should understand what it is they're agreeing to. They have a responsibility. Yes or no?
Well, you and I have different perspectives
maybe.
On this, Joe. People say yes sometimes under duress or because they, you know, because they feel
like... You know what, again, Ron, is this Ron?
No, it's John.
I'm John.
John, you're overthinking it. It's a simple thing. If 2 + 2 = 4, and if I say to you, this thing happened, what happened, Joe? Raindrops fell. Did you see them? Yes. Okay. Then I say to you later on, did you see the raindrops? And you go, well, I'm not sure. Then why did you say yes to begin with?
Well, that's a very simple point of view, and if it works for you, then carry on. But I don't think that's the way. I think it's... If you take the example that you gave, yes, there's no arguing with the example that you just gave. If you take most of what happens in human behavior and you try to expect that that's how things are going to work and it's simply a matter of communication, then I would say that is the thing that will bring you problems, whether it's with women or men or whoever, because that isn't how people are wired. And this show is about how people are wired and how different. And I don't think the conversation you and I are having is about men or women. Particularly, you could have the same issues with men. You could have the same issues with women.
So in other words, when a person communicates directly, they shouldn't communicate directly, but they should take into consideration the fact that somebody else or millions of people, the other people that you're giving these particular excuses to, I have to accommodate people who supposedly have an IQ over 80, and if they want to weasel out of certain commitments or say that they didn't understand later, I should accommodate them because for some reason you believe that's the way people are wired.
I'm not saying you have to do anything. You can accommodate them or you can not accommodate them. You can leave. You can go and do something else. You can choose maybe to decide not to be annoyed about the thing that's annoying you, or you can choose to get really angry with the people who are annoying you. You've got 100 choices. They're all your choices.
Then how should people act towards one another when they communicate directly with one another?
Can I ask something here? Joe.
Please do.
Joe.
Yeah, I'm waiting. Sure. It's not my show.
Okay,
I don't have to give you permission.
can you give us a specific example of what it is that you're talking about in regard to this type of conversation and what it is
that irritates you or whatever it is, that whatever.
Let's say somebody doesn't show up on time. It doesn't matter what it is. It's the fact is the communication is out there. It's clear. If I say to somebody, honey, you keep showing up late, and as a result, we can't get into the movie, we can't get into the concert, we can't get into the theater because the box office is now closed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, honey, I understand what you're saying, and, you know, it's something I have to work on, okay? But if you continue to work on it, that means that you're not really trying to actually exterminate this particular type of behavior you've got because you know there's a consequence. We can't get in.
So, you know, I totally can understand where now I have a clearer idea of that. And I don't think what you're describing in this particular instance, because I have a lot of experience with this kind of back and forth kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something from my perspective and my experience that we're even talking about communication, right? I think it has to, there's something bigger and deeper than that.
That's the point.
That I've learned to go, okay, so what is it that's going on here? And how am I going to choose to respond or react to this situation and this person? Because I can tell you from experience that I have been there. I've had levels of frustration and upset and anger and whatever else that you can imagine in certain situations like that. And finally having to look at myself and go, okay, am I going to continue this continue this, or am I going to just look at it from a different perspective? And so I don't see that that's a communication issue. I think that part of that is my issue and how I'm going to choose to respond and recognize the fact that, okay, so if over a given period of time this kind of thing happens in different ways at different times, in different situations, that I have to make myself an adjustment and say, okay, this is given past history, this could happen again, and so how am I going to adjust to make sure that she shows up on time?
Roger, I've got a very particular way of looking at this because my best friend in college, somebody I really liked a lot, got on very well with, spent a lot of time around, was incapable of turning up on time for anything. He would always be between like 13 and 15 minutes late. And so I eventually realized that this was something he did. He didn't know how not to do it. And so if I wanted to meet him at 4 o'clock, I would tell him we were going
to
meet at quarter to four, and we would get on absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, that's one way of doing it, because if the consequences aren't major, you can do that. You can make an adjustment and you say, look, this guy or this girl, 90%, 85% of this person is terrific, 15% is kind of annoying, I can put up with the other 15%. So it's not communication. A lot of people think communication is the key. Communication is not really the key to a good relationship. Because if you're going to be as direct as possible with someone, then either you're going to have to adopt them, which means you're going to be pulling your hair out, or you want them to give to the relationship as you're giving to the relationship, and if they're not, there is something going on behind the scenes, as it were. So with your buddy, that wouldn't bother me. If he and I were friends, we could go to a place, be late, right, and still get in. Now, I could adjust. I could make a quarter to five, as you did, and I could do that, and I would do that. Not a problem. But if a person is aggravating more than they're worth, and now you have to get down to exercising the boundaries that you've expressed to her, and she's still not complying, it isn't just communication. It's either willful, and I disagree with John was saying his friend was incapable of doing it. If you said, next time in the next year, if you're late for anything, I'm going to blow your brains out, he'll show up on time.
So he wouldn't show up at all because he'd expect me to blow his brains out. I think people find it a lot more difficult to change some things than you seem to expect them to. And I have three choices broadly in a relationship. I can accept and adjust and accommodate. I can I can leave, or I can stay and be really pissed off. That's kind of the broad choices, and I you know.
That's what people do all the time. But the thing is, when there is a particular type of annoying type of behavior, because people leave when you're annoyed. When you annoy them too much, they leave. After a while, they're going to break down whatever love you have for them, and the person whose love is being broken down does have those three choices. Okay? I'm not one who pulls my hair out. I don't accommodate very well. And I expect people to do what they say they're going to do.
Hey, Joe, can mm-hmm. you hold on a minute?
Okay.
We have another caller who wants to join the conversation. So, Steve. Hello?
Elka, you're live, so go ahead.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Elka. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, hi, Elka.
Okay, I guess I don't hear myself on the show. I'm just wondering, where in the hell is this conversation going? I was really fascinated with the trend about looking at nature versus nurture, and I was kind of looking at my own trajectory as a woman and growing up as a little girl who loved to play with dolls, but also loved to play with cars and railroad tracks and building materials. And that had nothing to, my parents really weren't very happy about that, frankly. But, I have no idea where this conversation is going. So that's why I kind of came in on this. I also wanted to come from the perspective of a mom of two boys. And how fascinating it was that I, in my wanting to give them all opportunities to be a fully developed human being, bought them dolls and did not want to buy them guns, but they would use a stick or a stone or their dolls as guns anyway. I mean, it was just I think it's a really interesting and much more complex topic than I think anybody can do anything with, to be honest. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say. It is complex.
It is interesting, and I think that it goes. One of the things that was discussed in this BBC program, and with regard to what you were talking about, and that there was a study done, I think, in 2002, if I'm not correct, if I'm correct.
Okay.
And it was the professor Melissa Hines, I believe, that did the study, where she took monkeys, male and female monkeys, and she gave them toys. She just put out toys. Right, and on the show, on the BBC show, they recreated the thing where they took boy toys and girl toys, and they just threw them out onto this field, and they called, and then they allowed the monkeys to just play with the toys.
Okay.
And what they discovered is that the female toys were played with primarily by the female monkeys, and so there were dolls and whatever else that they had there. And then on the flip side, they put out trucks and whatever that boys play with, and the male monkeys migrated to the boy toys, right?
Anything with wheels.
Right.
Okay, yeah, because I would kind of protest the word boy toys. Like
well,
I said,
I'm just using that because
I
can't.
I love little cars and trucks, but anyway, go on.
You know,
what would be perceived
I use
usually and typically as boy toys? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's politically incorrect, but I don't care. I just couldn't
think
of another name to call them.
Boy toys.
But the point of the research that I thought was really interesting is that they did not. These were monkeys. They weren't influenced by their parents or their culture or their peers or television or movies to act in a certain way. And
that
therefore, that was what triggered them to go to those things and be drawn to those things, right? Now, I think that it's an interesting conversation to have from the perspective of what you were saying. Is that like you didn't give your boys swords or guns or whatever it is?
Not at first, anyway.
Right, but they'll pick up a stick. Or they'll pick up whatever it is, and it's amazing to watch that, right? How, and especially for you as a mom and kind of knowing you and your background, where you come from, is I'm sure that buying guns for your boys wasn't like high priority or on the list at all.
No,
so
what Roger is talking about, by the way, anybody that's listening, is that my parents were preteens and teens in World War II Germany, and they saw people blown up and everything, and they were exceedingly anti-gun. I mean, really radically anti-gun. So you would not see a gun anywhere near our home. So that's how I was brought up and everything. And of course, some of that transferred to me. So that's where the nurture part comes in.
What this reminds me of is a fairly famous guy over here. He's a broadcaster called Alistair Cook, and he told the story that he and his wife decided to bring up their children without guns, and they pretty much succeeded in doing that. And one of them was a lifelong pacifist, and the other joined the Marines.
Right.
And
the Marines, interesting.
There's only one place, perhaps, which this, for me, has to do anything to do with the conversation that we had when we went off track, and that is that people will do what they do, and they don't easily change. And whether it's hardwired by genetics or whether it's hardwired by personality or by their experience growing up or by whatever, when people get into a certain behavior, it's can be really hard to shift. And so it makes it very difficult to make for scientists when they're looking at adults to get clarity about whether what happened was the result of something that was genetic or whether it was socialization. I mean, for instance, when Roger was talking about, the prejudice about potential black quarterbacks, it's still the case that people have the view that most women, their brains are not wired for maths. It's like the women are going to find maths difficult because their brains are wired differently than men's. And it's very difficult to do the research which actually makes that clear, because how do you take 500 men and 500 women and then bring them up in a completely detached environment that doesn't subject them to any of the usual culturation. But when people actually get more properly into this and find places where women have not been brought up in a culture which does bias them against maths, they find that the difference is much, much, much smaller than that which we're used to experiencing and that we think is normal in our culture. And I use that example because I think it's really... If I wanted people to get anything out of this call, it's that a great deal of what we think is true in this area, actually, it's just the way that we've created our culture to make things, and we don't yet know how they could be.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking of right now of a young friend of mine who's 23, 24, and we call her a math magician. A mathematician instead of a mathematician, because not only is she brilliant in math, but she has an incredible ability to teach people of all ages, all levels, teach and communicate math. So that's kind of an interesting combination as far as I'm concerned. She's an excellent teacher, and she's able to bring that out, and sometimes that's known as a more feminine quality, is to use words and this sort of thing. But really, she's just her own person, and she's brilliant in both. Another little, do you mind if I just talk about one other little vignette that came to mind while you were talking, John? And that is my eldest kid, eventually I gave up on this whole notion of not buying them the little army guys and everything. So he would have these army soldiers and little tanks and this kind of thing, small enough that I would always be sucking them up in the vacuum cleaner, right? And he'd be having guys rappelling down the house plants and making battles up and stuff like that. And I remember one day he's having his war zone in my living room, and I just paused. I came around the corner from the kitchen watching him blow things up and everything, and I thought to myself, oh, my God, I can't believe that I bought my child war toys. And I muttered it loud enough, apparently, that the kid heard it, and he just whipped around, and he said, Mom, look. And he's like 7 years old. He says, Mom, I'm making war here so that I don't make war out there. And then he just kind of vaguely pointed outside, and he went back to blowing things up. So I really thought it just shut me right up. I couldn't respond to that. Of course not.
Right.
So,
great story.
So, for whatever reason, and then there was this. They're now in their 20s, and so Nintendo was fairly new when they were growing up, and all their friends had it and stuff like that. No, I was going to have a Nintendo-free zone. But the fact of the matter is, they were going to their friend's house and blowing things up and murdering people and whatever. So. Finally,
I think my daughter was going to have a something similar where there wasn't going to be any games in the computer games or whatever, and that didn't last very long.
No, it didn't last very long. So the good news was that there were a lot of kids over at the house, and I could kind of monitor them and feed them cookies and good things. The not so good news was, oh my God, I just saw the nature of some of these for general use. Things, and it was always blowing people up and et cetera, and they just loved it. So I'm not really exactly sure where we're going with this, but I know my two young men are really cool human beings, and no, they're not out there murdering people and blowing things up and all like that. So I think it goes back to
something that John said earlier about there's things that we come into this life with that we're not aware of that also plays a part in that. I mean, I remember I was a substitute teacher for 2 years, and there was a third grade boy, and he was very sweet, and I still remember his name, and his goal in life was to be in the Army. He wanted to be in the Army in the worst way. And I don't know how old boys are or how old kids are when they're in the third grade. But the point is like, okay, where did that come from? Because I knew his parents. And his parents weren't like saying, hey, you need to go in the Army at 8 years old, right? I mean, so it's like, where did that come from? There's a bigger question there to be looked at, and I think that, we're going to continue this into next week's show, because I think that there's so much that we didn't get to that we want to get to, and I want to thank our callers today. We're up against time right now, so we're going to continue this conversation into next week, get into more of the
the scientific part of it and the idea of cultural versus biological determinism and all that. And I want to thank everybody for joining us. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Roger. And just let's remind people that they can always put their points of view into the forum on the website on rightaboutmen.com.
And our Facebook page is rightaboutmen.com. And our email is rightaboutmen@gmail.com. So we invite you to share your ideas, comments, questions, suggestions. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care. Bye now.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, you do.